Imagine waking up one morning and having this odd revelation about your life. Like you've been sleepwalking through the whole thing, and suddenly everything that used to feel normal hits you with this weird, unsettling clarity. And you realize you've been chasing money like it was oxygen, and treating time like a loan that you'll somehow pay back later. And convincing yourself that the person you call me is some solid, permanent thing instead of a well-trained illusion. And for a brief moment, just a flicker, you see it all for what it is, a beautifully orchestrated hallucination that you've been taking way too seriously and approaching in the most dysfunctional way possible. And then you get hit with this wave that can only be described as an unlikely combination of nausea and elation. So this is usually the moment that leads to people discovering Alan Watts. So let's talk about Alan Watts, the guy who somehow managed to explain the meaning of existence without sounding like the sort of person who claims their aura has a gluten allergy. So Watts was a British philosopher who lived from 1915 to 1973, spending his whole life trying to translate Eastern wisdom into something that Westerners could understand. Meaning, he took ideas like mindfulness and non-duality, and he reframed them for people who were too stressed and too emotionally constipated to sit still for 10 seconds. He wrote something like two dozen books, delivered hundreds of lectures, smoked enough to qualify as a walking fire hazard, and he still managed to say things that rattled people's cages long after he was gone, which is more than most of us are ever going to accomplish, and we're not even chain smoking our way through all of it. Now, before we go any further, I think it's worth mentioning that Watts was kind of a beautiful disaster himself. He wasn't some ascetic monk living in a cave, eating rice, contemplating the void in between bathroom breaks. He liked bourbon the way most people like oxygen. He got married multiple times because, well, apparently once wasn't enough of a learning experience. He lived on a houseboat in Sausalito, California, and was perfectly comfortable being a walking contradiction. He was a philosopher who drank, a spiritual teacher who couldn't keep a marriage together, a guy preaching presence, well, almost certainly nursing a hangover, which, frankly, I think made him more relatable than most philosophers who act like they've transcended all human needs while secretly stress eating crackers at 2 a.m. So Watts understood something crucial. You don't have to be perfect to understand something true. You don't need to be enlightened to point at the exit sign while you're stuck in the burning building with everyone else. And I think that's part of what made him so effective. He wasn't preaching from some holier-than-thou mountaintop wearing robes that cost more than your rent. He was down here with the rest of us, struggling with his own demons, like the rest of us, just noticing things. Noticing that ultimately we're all collectively insane and calling it civilization. So his whole mission, if you had to boil it down, was pretty simple. Show people the invisible nonsense ruining their lives. The stuff we can't see because we're too busy performing it. The scripts were given without realizing someone else wrote them, and they're terrible. And we also didn't audition for this role in the first place. And he was very, very good at this. Though his approach could be sometimes a little opaque. Like listening to someone explain a dream they had where everything made perfect sense until they said it out loud. But I think that was just part of his charm. He had this way of explaining things so clearly that you felt enlightened for a moment, and then 5 minutes later, you weren't quite sure what he actually said. It's like he had this ability to clarify and mystify everything at the same time. You'd finish one of his lectures feeling like you just understood the meaning of life and then immediately forget what that meaning was. Sort of like trying to remember a phone number someone told you while you were drunk. But somehow that confusion itself was part of the point. Because maybe the problem isn't that we don't understand life, it's that we think we're supposed to. So Watts noticed a repeating loop in modern life that goes something like this. You wake up, probably feeling like you've been hit by a truck. You do work you don't love for people you wouldn't save in a lifeboat scenario. You make money you don't enjoy, so you can afford the therapy you need because of the job that makes you the money. You buy things you don't need because the dopamine hit lasts longer than your attention span. You try to impress people whose names you couldn't recall if your life depended on it, which it doesn't, but you act like it does. And we do all this while we tell ourselves that eventually, someday, we'll be happy. Not today, though. God forbid today. No, today is for the grind and the hustle, the journey, the character building montage that's been going on for 17 years with no soundtrack. So we're stuck in this situation where the happiness is always allegedly coming later. It's like a furniture delivery that's been delayed since 1994 and customer service stopped answering your calls. And the thing is, we've been conditioned to believe this is all normal. That suffering now, so you can enjoy later, is just what responsible adults do, right? So we wear exhaustion like a merit badge or something. We brag about how little we slept, like insomnia is an Olympic sport. So, and we do stuff like compete over who's busier, who's more stressed, who hasn't taken a vacation in 5 years, as if misery is some kind of virtue, and rest is for people who've just given up on their dreams, which we definitely haven't. We're just, you know, postponing them indefinitely while we slowly die inside. But Watts would ask, what are you actually working toward? And more importantly, who told you that's what you wanted? Because a lot of us are chasing these goals we never consciously choose. We just absorbed them, mainly from parents who were terrified we'd end up homeless, and from a culture that's basically just advertising with a few TV shows sprinkled in. And so we internalized a script about what success looks like and what a good life is supposed to look like. And we've been performing that script ever since, usually without asking if we even believe in the play or if we just showed up because everyone else did, and leaving felt, you know, rude. Okay. So one of Watts's big points was that money isn't wealth. It's the receipt. Well, what did he mean by this? Think of it as a symbol that we printed and worshipped and then forgot was originally just a stand-in for value, not the value itself. Sort of like how we used to trade actual goods, and then somewhere along the way, someone said, hey, let's use these fancy-looking pieces of paper and coins instead. And everyone agreed, which in retrospect was a weird thing to trust each other about. So we treat money the same way toddlers treat stickers. We collect it, we hoard it, count it obsessively if we acquire enough of it. We assign meaning to it, and then we pout when someone else has more than us or shinier ones. And we've turned it into the ultimate report card for existence. Basically, your worth as a human being calculated quarterly. But actual wealth, real human wealth, is everything money can't buy. It's the ability to sleep without your brain replaying every mistake you've ever made in your life like a greatest hits album nobody asked for. It's a body that doesn't feel like it's one wrong move away from a workers' comp claim. It's a mind that's not constantly revving a car whose check engine light has been on since 2003. It's people who love you despite your questionable life choices. And that thing that you said at Thanksgiving that everyone's still trying to forget. It's time to do absolutely nothing without feeling like you're committing a crime against the law of productivity. It's the freedom to say no without spiraling into existential dread about whether you're a bad person. And, you know, nothing exposes the illusion more brutally than this. Think of a billionaire dying in a hospital room. You know, he doesn't get a checkout button for one extra Tuesday. There's no app for that. No There's no premium membership that includes immortality. All that money, and they still can't skip the line we're all standing in. I think chasing money without meaning is like trying to hydrate by drinking sand. I mean, you can keep doing it, but eventually you'll just die thirsty and confused. Now, Watts wasn't anti-money. I wouldn't say he was the type of person who romanticized poverty like it was character building instead of just poverty. He understood that money is useful. You know, it keeps the lights on, buys food. It prevents you from becoming a cautionary tale, right? But somewhere along the way, we started worshiping the tool instead of using it. So it seems that we've turned it into the end goal instead of the means. And that's where everything gets twisted now. It's like a carnival mirror, except you paid admission and you can't leave. Because when money becomes the only metric for success in your life, you stop asking yourself what you actually want. You just assume more. Well, more what? More money, more stuff, more status, more things to put in your house or apartment or whatever that look, you'll look at them twice and then forget they exist. So I think we need to ask ourselves more of what and for what purpose. But under the circumstances, unfortunately, these kinds of questions, they end up getting buried under the noise of just more accumulation. Like a really depressing video game where the points don't mean anything, but you're addicted, and so you can't stop playing. Watts also pointed out something that should have ended society overnight. Time, at least the way we think about it, is made up. That's right. Now, the passing seconds are real enough, and physics is still a thing. But the mental divide between right now and later, that's fiction. That's us basically torturing ourselves with an imaginary line we drew, and then we forgot that we drew it. We act like the present moment is some inconvenience we just want to get over with, right? Like it's this annoying hallway we have to sprint through on our way to the so-called real life that's allegedly waiting somewhere in the future, probably next to that furniture delivery from 1994. And we say things like, I'll get to relax after I retire, which is really just code for, I'll relax when I'm too old to actually enjoy it and my back hurts. Or I'll enjoy myself after I get promoted. And then you get promoted, but there's a lot more responsibilities that come with it. So you get bogged down and work longer hours, and you can't do as good of a job until eventually you get laid off. And then you have to find a new job and start the whole process all over again. It's always about some undetermined point in the future. Most of us are actually living in an imaginary future. That's our lives. We're not actually living right now. It's some magical moment when everything will finally click into place and you'll be allowed to be happy at long last. Like happiness is a members only club and you're still waiting for your application to get approved. And I think the reason we do this is because deep down we have this convoluted need to always have something to look forward to. We want to believe that we have time and the illusion of control over that timeline. Like we're project managers of our own lives and everything's going accordingly. And I think the reason for this is because deep down in our subconscious, we know we're mortal. We know we're going to die. We know the clock's always ticking. And this fear, unconsciously or sometimes very consciously at like 3 a.m., it drives us forward. But it's just an illusion. Because the future never actually arrives the way you think it's going to. It just keeps moving forward like a mirage. It's always there, never here. And you know, you chase it until your knees give out, and then at some point you realize your entire life happened somewhere between meetings you don't even remember attending. Meetings that could have been emails, you know, meetings about meetings. It's that whole life is what happens when you're making other plans realization. Except nobody tells you any of that until it's too late and you've already spent 20 years making the plans. And this isn't some poetic observation that sounds nice on a motivational poster or something. It's a practical disaster. Because when you're constantly in a state of living in the future, focused on the future, you're not actually living at all. You're just in this constant state of rehearsal. You're planning. You're waiting for your real life to start, like it's a show that's been delayed indefinitely and nobody knows when it's going to air. Think about how often you're physically present but mentally elsewhere. You're at dinner with someone you care about, but you're thinking about tomorrow's to-do list and whether you said something stupid in an email. Sound familiar? I mean, we all do this. You're on a walk or maybe you're in bed, but you're replaying an argument from 3 days ago and coming up with better comebacks that, of course, will never be used. Just a bunch of pointless stuff, right? But where are you really? Because it's not here. But right now, in this tiny slice of existence you're experiencing right now as you hear my voice, that's the only place anything actually happens. This moment is your whole life. It's all you ever really get. And unfortunately, it's the one thing that we treat like a disposable napkin at a fast food restaurant. And it's both liberating and terrifying to realize this. It's like realizing that you've been playing a game wrong your entire life, except the game is existence and there's no reset button. But if this moment is really all there is, then you can stop performing for some imaginary future audience. You can actually stop treating your life like it's some really long audition that never ends. And you can just be here. Which I know sounds simple, but it feels almost impossible after a lifetime of conditioning that says here isn't good enough. And then we have the ego. So if money is the carrot and time is the trick, the ego is the sleight of hand magician saying, don't worry, I'll handle everything. Well, it slowly sets your internal world on fire. So your ego tells you, you're on your own. You have to earn your worth. You need more success, more status, more money, more validation from strangers on the internet who will forget about you in exactly 4 seconds. And then you'll finally be okay. Maybe. Probably not. But just keep trying anyway. But Watts kept hammering home that the chase itself is the suffering. The ego convinces you that you're this isolated little helpless creature trying to fill a hole that can't be filled because the hole is the trying itself. But here's a question. Imagine, well, all right, what if you were already enough? What if you don't need to become anything because you're already everything you need to be? You've been too busy chasing your own tail to notice. So, all right, imagine waking up tomorrow and realizing you don't have to prove yourself anymore. You're not auditioning for your own life. The part is yours. You already got cast. And that's enough. I think this is where Watts gets radical. He's talking about seeing through the entire structure of the self, or the idea of the self that we have, recognizing that the you that you think you are, the isolated individual trying to survive a dog-eat-dog world, is itself a construct. You're not actually separate from the world. You're woven into it. You're like an expression of it. The same way a wave is an expression of the ocean. And I think once you see that, the whole game changes. The pressure drops, the anxiety loosens its grip, because you're not fighting existence anymore. You're actually participating in it. You're dancing with it. Badly, maybe, but at least you're on the dance floor instead of in the bathroom having a panic attack. Now, Watts wasn't telling people to opt out of society altogether or live in a tree or whatever. He said, remain in the world. Just stop letting it puppeteer you into oblivion. Stop letting it convince you that your worth is determined by your salary or job title or how many followers you have and so forth. Work becomes play when you stop treating your worth like a performance review. Money becomes lighter when it goes back to being a tool instead of a report card. And time becomes spacious when you stop hoarding every minute like a dragon sitting on gold coins, except the coins are ours and you're just tired. It's really about finally showing up for life instead of chasing some imaginary future version of yourself that doesn't exist and never will. Now, of course, you can work and have ambitions. You can care about things and own things. The difference is you're not doing it out of desperation. You're not white-knuckling your way through existence hoping that someday you'll finally be okay. You're playing the game instead of being played by it. Okay. So how do you actually get out of this trap then? How do you stop the hamster wheel when you're the hamster and jumping off feels like a death sentence? Because that's a real fear. I think it starts with redefining what wealth even means. Actually sit down and ask yourself, what do I actually value? Not what I'm supposed to value. What do I actually care about when I strip away all of the performative bullshit? So try to shift your focus toward things that actually hold your life together. You know, your health, your connections with people who actually know you, your presence, your experiences, the things you'll actually remember on your deathbed, which probably won't be that time that you answered emails until 11 p.m. on a Friday. Figure out what actually matters to you. Does your life reflect any of it? Or are you living someone else's life and calling it yours? Then practice presence. And it doesn't have to be sitting cross-legged on a cushion until your legs go numb. It could be just paying attention to the moment you're actually living. Actually, how about just tasting your coffee instead of scrolling through your phone? Listening to someone without planning your response. Feeling your bare feet on the ground. Now, obviously, these aren't some intimidating mystical practices. They're just simple, small ways of being awake to your own life, which should be the bare minimum, but somehow it's become this radical act. Start watching the ego in action. Notice when it's chasing validation and when it's whispering that you're behind and that everyone else has it all figured out, that you're failing some invisible test that doesn't exist. The moment you start observing it instead of believing it, the spell breaks. Question the scripts you're running. Every time you feel that pull, that sense that you should be achieving something, stop and ask, says who? Where did this belief come from? Did I choose it, or did it choose me? Here's another thing you can do. Practice doing nothing. And I mean actually nothing. Not scrolling, just sitting there, being bored. Yeah, your brain is gonna revolt. But that resistance is exactly the point. That's the programming revealing itself. Start saying no to things you don't want to do, to obligations that drain you. I don't want to is a complete sentence. Yes, people will be annoyed. Let them. Their opinion of you is, it's not your responsibility to manage. And I would say, most importantly, stop waiting for permission to live your life. You don't need to earn it. You don't need to achieve enough or be good enough to deserve it. You're already here. The life is already happening. This is it. Because here's what Watts understood that most of us forget. You can't really think your way out of this. You can't logic yourself into presence. And I really believe that the shift happens when you stop trying to always get somewhere else, get something else, and you realize you've been here the whole time. That's it. That's the thing. And it's, you know, it sounds so simple, it's almost offensive, right? You're telling me the answer is just stopping, just being here? Well, Watts basically said, yeah, that's actually it. You know, the problem isn't that life is inherently complicated. The problem is that we've made it complicated because we can't accept that the answer might be simple. And, you know, we get in our own way. Now, simple doesn't necessarily mean easy, but I think we can choose differently. And we can do it right now, right in this moment. So maybe the question isn't how do I become successful or how do I finally feel enough? Maybe the question is, what if I already am? What if this moment, exactly as it is the only wealth that I'll ever need? So that's Alan Watts. You know, that's the message in a nutshell. Of course, you know, Alan Watts had a lot more things to say, but, you know, ultimately the answer isn't hiding in some complicated philosophy. It's not locked behind some grand achievement that you haven't unlocked yet. It's sitting right there. And it's been there the whole time, just waiting for you to stop and notice it. We got so caught up in the game that we forgot we were playing. And we took it so seriously that we forgot it was supposed to be at least bearable, at least present. And maybe that's all enlightenment really is. It's not some mystical state where you float above reality. It's just a process of remembering. Waking up, showing up for your own life instead of sleepwalking through it. Now you can take it or leave it. Or you can consider that maybe the way we've been doing things isn't exactly working. And that all this striving, it isn't getting us anywhere except exhausted. And I don't know, maybe there's another way. And, you know, not easier necessarily, but definitely saner. One where you're actually present for your own life as it's happening. And where you finally stop running and you realize that maybe you've been home the whole time. All right. I think that's all I've got today. As I always say, thanks for listening.